Right, it's always nice to welcome George Lee for a G2 Summit. Let's find out what's happening in and about Ireland. George, good to talk to you. How are you?
And you too, Ger. It's been a busy couple of weeks here in Ireland and a lot going on. So I suppose it's probably timely to do a summit as we come into the month of September.
That's right. Do you remember a time when the summer months used to be called the silly season in media because there was nothing happening for June and July? For July and August particularly. There's no such thing as a silly season, no, sure there isn't.
No, it's all a silly season.
Sorry, it's all a silly season. You're absolutely right. I'm getting sillier by the moment.
You know, the 1st of September always struck terror into me because I was actually speaking to a member of my family about it yesterday. From the 15th of August, you know, that feeling of doom, impending doom came over you as you knew that school was looming. You couldn't really ever enjoy those last 2 weeks.
The school books were brought out and covered in the old the wallpaper that wasn't used.
The brown Roger store is back.
That's it. And then you had the new lunchbox was being bought and the shoes and the uniform. Oh, lads, it was nightmare stuff. All right. That was just a way of torturing children. And you know what? Nobody was ever held accountable for that.
Well, I had my sister's grandson started school yesterday or the day before, and you know his comment was, "I'm beginning to feel a little bit nervous before he went in." You know?
Right.
And all I could think of was, "Yeah, you know, you're not going to the same place I went to."
No. I actually had a similar conversation. I remember telling my mother after about 3 or 4 days of my first week in school that, "Yes, Grand, no, that's done, it's finished, won't go anymore." She should have made me, really, shouldn't she?
She should have listened to you.
She should. Right, listen, talking about silly season, Taoiseach Micheál Martin was on the television and the radio and all over the place yesterday. He's announced the plan for the final easing of COVID-19 restrictions, and the Taoiseach addressed the nation yesterday evening after the Cabinet signed off on the plan for the final easing of the COVID-19 restrictions. I suppose having the Taoiseach address the nation is something that we've become very accustomed to in Ireland since COVID-19 started. And you know, they did well at the start of it. They made a hames of it after that. They made a hames of starting the rollout of the vaccinations, but they caught up and they're doing a really good job on it now. So what's in this plan for easing the whole thing, seeing as that we're all, what are we at, 78% coverage now in the country?
Mm-hmm.
Vaccination.
He's a great lad. He did it all on his own.
He did, you know? The creator.
Yeah. First of all, if I can just go to the optics of it. I think back to the statement that Leo Varadkar made in Washington at the very start of all of this when he was over there, and you know, suddenly it became apparent that this was a global pandemic and we were going to have to shut down the country and we're going to have to do all of those things. And I remember, everybody being glued to the television.
That's
and
right.
A hush coming over the house. It was almost like one of those Walter Cronkite moments, you know, when the president has been shot in Dallas, Texas. It was almost one of those moments. Last night when Micheál Martin was making this announcement, it was vaguely on in the background at home as we ate dinner. The thought struck me, this has been so PR handled at this stage that, he actually said nothing in his speech last night that hadn't been leaked 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Really, you wonder about these great speeches. I mean, are they actually being done for reeling in the years
they
in
are.
20 years' time, or are they actually being done to tell us something? Anyway, that's an aside. Look, the news is good, and thankfully the news is good and it's getting better as we go along. He did announce the final easing of COVID-19 restrictions. He said the time is now right to begin the move from regulation and widespread restriction on people's personal freedoms to an approach primarily defined by public health advice, personal judgment and responsibility.
Okay.
So I think, look, go back to people. Have a bit of sense, lads. If you're in situations you're not happy with, take it on. So just a quick run through, because I have it here in front of me. The return to offices will be phased from the 20th of September. Now, that presents all sorts of problems, obviously, and it will have to be legislated for some of that.
Okay.
The public transport, 100% capacity from today, which is excellent as well.
Yeah.
Anybody that's been using trains and buses will have seen that. Entertainment and public gatherings, 60% capacity. Well, everybody that goes has to be fully vaccinated from the 6th of September. And also weddings, no capacity change at 100, but live music and dancing from the 6th of September. Well, that'll come as a great relief to an awful lot of people that you and I know, you know, that have had their livelihoods cut off effectively for 18 months. And especially now coming into the Christmas season when things start to get busy, you know, at least now people will have a way of making a living. And I think that's very important for a lot of guys and girls that are in the entertainment business. And also for, you know, people that can actually go out and like to hear a bit of Simon and Garfunkel been sung badly in the back corner of the pub.
Yeah.
<You know? laughs> the other significant one, and I think he got great joy in telling us this, is that Neffet will be scaled back. Because there was a time in this country when people reckoned that Neffet was running the country. And I think the day that Neffet is finally disbanded will be really a Kabul moment in terms of the government, to be perfectly honest with you.
But will they disband? I know there was talks over the weekend that it would be, but yesterday he said that the Taoiseach said that it was being scaled back. You see, I think that they need them as a scapegoat. I think they need, when the hard decisions are being made and the announcements are being made, that they're going to have to be able to say, well, on advice from Neffet, we're doing this. So will they get rid of that little safety net?
Look, if they can disband it, they can reform it, or they can call it something else.
Okay.
You and I, again, have been around the PR merry-go-round for so long to know that they're going to find some way of making themselves smell of roses, no matter if they're coming out of the dung, you know.
That's true. All right. So generally, are people at ease in Ireland with these, with responsibility being handed over to the citizens themselves?
Personally, I feel that people have decided on this themselves about 3 weeks ago. And that has always been the case, I think, in a lot of these moves. It's quite interesting. I'm even beginning to go to meetings now where everybody kind of agrees we'll take off the mask, you know. That's beginning to happen, and people are more at ease with each other. I actually went to Mass last Sunday week in St. John's Cathedral here in Limerick, and I was amazed to see people finally coming back together again. And it was quite nice, you know. It was quite pleasant, and the social aspects of things are beginning to creep back in again, where previously if you met somebody you were nearly running to the far side of the car park.
That's
and
right.
You had to have a chat.
Yeah,
you know?
text me
Or we'll have to do that coffee when this is all over, you
yeah
know? So
yeah,
look,
yeah, yeah.
I think that's changing as well.
All right. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, I've always had, for many years I've held the idea that the United Nations Security Council is nothing but a talking shop. But there seems to be a bit of celebration in Ireland, because Ireland takes the presidency of the United Nations Security Council for 30 days from today, with the focus for the month expected, not surprisingly, to be on the humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. And I'm right to say that the politicians in Ireland are quite excited about this, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, over the many, many years, I suppose one of the great aspects of Ireland has been her ability to reach out and to make a difference internationally. And we punch way above our weight, mm-hmm. to use that awful term, internationally on any number of levels, but particularly in the humanitarian area. And look, this, while a lot of this is window dressing and a lot of this is, you know, we rotate it around and everyone gets a shot at it for a month, it does actually put Ireland at centre stage a little bit as well. You're right about the Security Council. Look, the Security Council very rarely produce anything because of the veto. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the permanent members, and I think there's five permanent members on the Security Council, every one of those can issue a veto against any particular thing that comes up. Mm-hmm. But look, they are a very powerful body. You know, to be in there is to be sitting at the top table and to be meeting the right people. And it's probably about the context that you make and the way in which you hold yourself for the period of time that you're on that as well, that allows you, you know, to take your place among the nations of the earth, to use that. Robert Emmet. So, yeah, look, the focus will be very much on the whole humanitarian aspects of what's going on in Afghanistan. And God love them. It's, you know, it's just a dreadful scene. And I'm not not going to get into the politics of it one way or the other. But during, we're about, I think, 9 months now into our two-year term mm-hmm. on the UN Security Council. And we have very, very much put a focus on how conflict disproportionately affects women and girls.
Okay.
And I know that our ambassador, Nason Byrne, she has been absolutely excellent and has been to the forefront of bringing these issues there. And, you know, again, Ireland has set a bar, and I think we should be a little bit proud.
Okay, all righty. Let's have a look at the population of Ireland. And I see that we have been busy because Ireland's population has risen about 5 million for the first time for the first time since 1851. That's according to new figures. Data published yesterday by the Central Statistics Office, the CSO, shows that the Republic of Ireland's population now stands at about 5.01 million. There's a lot of us, George.
There is, and on the entire island of Ireland now, of course, we're gone back over 7 million.
That's right.
And including the north. So that's an even more of us, Ger.
That's true, yeah.
the interesting part of this is that when you dig down into it, the figures show that the Republic's population increased by 34,000 between April 2020 and April 2021. Now, bear in mind, that's during the pandemic as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
More than 65,000 people immigrated to Ireland, that's coming in that 12-month period, with nearly half of those estimated to be returning Irish nationals. So, again, this remote working, all of that comes into play here, and it's an awful lot of memmies and an awful lot more washing machines and an awful lot more of other things, I would say. But the CSO has also said that the highest number of returnees, and this is, they have been the highest number since 2007, but interestingly, Dublin saw its population grow only slightly, whereas the rest of the country grew disproportionately.
All right.
To the way that Dublin, and that has to be positive as well in creating a balance in the country from the major urban areas into the more rural areas.
And that would be a lot to do with people from outside of Dublin who would have emigrated maybe and come back home, and they're working from home and living in places, as you say, outside of Dublin. And it's good to see.
Well, it also has knock-on effects, obviously, across the education system from... Mm-hmm. Hello? Yep, across the economy, but also across the school system. But it also, I suppose, accentuates the fact that we do need a bigger broadband rollout and a quicker broadband rollout across the country that will allow people to work remotely. And I do have to say, and I was involved in a little bit of this at the very start of it, there's an awful lot more remote hubs being built in very rural places. I saw one even in Cross in County Clare recently, where people are now able to go into a hub, you know, have a desk set up, mm-hmm. have high-speed broadband at their fingertips and work away from there, even if they just need to get away from home or if they don't have the level of broadband in very rural areas.
Okay, that's good, I suppose. As you say, good knock-on and good positive effects as well for the outside of Dublin areas. Do you know what, George? I think there's a great amount of credit due to the Olympians in both Olympics because we're a small nation, and even though we're a sports-mad nation, we haven't really excelled, you know, down through the years, the generations, at things like the Olympics. But with the number of medals that are coming home from both Olympics, I think it's time to just shine a light on everybody that has put so much of their heart and their soul and their lives into training and into getting to Tokyo, and the upsets that they've had with the pandemic and the whole lot. We've done very well, haven't we?
We have. I have to take issue with your first comment. I think as a nation, we've punched way above our weight.
Really?
In terms of Olympians down through the years. I would refer you to a YouTube video that Dr. Matt Potter and myself actually did a number of years ago on Limerick's Olympians, which is available on YouTube for anybody that wants to watch it. But we have actually punched way above our weight. I had the pleasure during lockdown, actually, of speaking on the phone with Ireland's first gold medalist, Ronnie Delaney. Wow. And a more delightful man you could ever meet. He just a real gentleman. And when I say gentleman in the old style, he's the sort of guy that would hold the door of the car open for his wife getting in and out.
Just a
really lovely man. That's an aside. But yes, look, we've done very well. And the representatives that we have put out there are super representatives, and they're so representative of all that's good about in Ireland. Now, you know, we hear day after day of the bad stories, you know, of people been broken into and people have been beaten up and all that. But when you see the likes of Kelly Harrington, and I had the pleasure, you may have heard that Limerick won the All-Ireland again this year.
We'll talk about it in a minute. I hadn't forgotten. Go on.
With the family connection. But the coming down the day of the All-Ireland, I passed by Kelly Harrington's house,
really?
Because it's right next to Croke Park, and the day of the semi-final, and it was the day before she fought, and half the country was blowing Portland Road getting their photograph taken outside Kelly's house. And I just said, this is wonderful, you know, it's just a national thing. But I have to go to the Paralympians, because you know, whatever about the Olympics, we are really punching above our weight in the Paralympics. I know I have a neighbour, and she's only 16 years of age. She's qualified, I think, for 6 finals at this stage in the swimming, Roisin Éireann. And it's just fantastic to see it. And you know, particularly in the Paralympics, the mountains that these people have had to climb to get to where they are, you know, and what they've had to live with all through their lives, and to see this now coming through and coming to fruition for them is just wonderful.
I remember thinking at the time when Kelly Harrington won her gold, you know, when she was told she couldn't go to the 2020 Olympics because of the pandemic back in 2020, she was in the middle of her training. And what did she do? She went back to work in St. Vincent's Hospital as a cleaner to contribute to our country. And I thought to myself, you know what? Every girl in Ireland should know this story. And this is who your hero should be. This is the type of person that you should be looking at and saying, that's a real hero. So look, there are so many of them in the various teams. So well done to them all. George, you wanted to talk about the All-Ireland. I know you did. And that's why a G2 was suggested. So we'd mention the hurling.
Anyway, did I mention that Limerick won the All-Ireland?
You did. And delighted. And listen, you know, there's been so many jokes around about it since it happened. And congratulations. And let's give your family the credit that they deserve, because Peter, your nephew was a stalwart, not just in the semi-final before he was sent off, but in the final before the Creta got injured. What did he do? He put 5 points over?
Yeah. It was an injustice that he got sent off.
On the first occasion.
And that was proven.
Yes, go on.
In a court of law. Let me just put that in there. Yeah, he scored 5 points. Look, he like all of my children and my nephews and nieces, is just a wonderful lad. He has excelled himself. His brother has excelled himself as well. Mike is the fullback, and Mike now also has 3 All-Ireland medals, which is just a wonderful achievement. I have never spoken publicly about this, I suppose, but you would have a sense of pride, as I do in all of my own children. My son has begun to excel himself on the golf course as well.
Again,
a couple of prizes over the last couple of weeks.
Good.
So, look, I suppose, Ger, look, this is the very top and elite of sport. Poor Peter has sustained a very serious injury again. I mentioned that Mike was on the panel. Mike was on the panel, but the reason he was on the panel and not playing was that he ruptured an ACL last year, which is a very serious injury, as you know. Peter has now ruptured his ACL as well, so he has to go for surgery towards the end of this month. So anyone that's out there, say a prayer. It's a nine month layoff for him. I don't envy my sister having 2 torn ACLs under the roof and crutches and ice and all sorts of things. But anyway, look, the best of luck to all of them. And I don't want the focus just to be on my men, but I suppose there is a sense of pride.
There is, of course. The 11th of September, George, is when Mayo will meet Tyrone. Now, I'm saying Tyrone especially because there's been a lot of fuss on social media because people are calling that county Tyrone. It's Tyrone. Anyway, they're the All-Ireland football final, 11th of September, and the Sam Maguire Cup is the coveted prize for that. you sent me a fabulous story about Sam Maguire that I hadn't heard before. Tell me about it.
And I hadn't either. I actually picked this up on Facebook, and I'll just read it for you, I think, and just let it stand on its own. The Sam Maguire Cup. Sam Maguire was a Protestant farmer from West Cork who became a close ally of Michael Collins in London in the struggle for Irish independence. In 1928, the year after Sam died, the Sam Maguire Cup was created and presented to the GEA to commemorate his contributions to that quest for freedom and to the GEA. These days, everybody knows about the Sam Maguire presented to the winner of the GEA All-Ireland football final. But few people remember who Sam Maguire was. And his birthplace, which is 6 kilometres north of Dunmanway in West Cork, is now a mere shell. He's buried in St Mary's Protestant Cemetery in Dunmanway. His grave is marked by a Celtic cross. The local GEA grounds was named the Sam Maguire Memorial Park after him in 1974, but otherwise he has been completely forgotten, as have the details of his life. The Maguires, who were Church of Ireland, had a large farm in the townland of Malabracca, where Sam was born in 1879. The family was relatively well-to-do and were noted locally for always going out of their way to help neighbours, whether they were Catholic or Protestant. When he was 20, he passed the British Civil Service exam and got a job in the post office in London. While in London, he joined the London Hibernians, even though he had never played GEA at home. However, he played the All-Ireland finals on at least 3 occasions at the beginning of the 20th century. Sam was also the only Protestant to have ever captained a team in the All-Ireland final. In London, he became a close friend of Michael Collins, another West Cork man, and he became the head of intelligence in Britain for the IRB, the Irish Republican Brotherhood. He was also the main agent for Collins in Britain for smuggling weapons for the Irish War of Independence. His work in the post office also meant he was able to access much vital intelligence from the mail going in and out. When the new Irish Free State came into being, Sam supported the pro-treaty side and returned home to Ireland. He got a job with the new Irish Civil Service, but soon clashed with the pro-British staff who had stayed on after the treaty. In 1924, he was fired from the Irish Civil Service with no pension, but with a gratuity of £100 from the Free State government. Sam returned to the family farm in West Cork, but soon developed TB, and he died in 1927 at the age of 48. On his last visit to Dunmanway, he gave away his last £5, saying that he wouldn't need it anymore. Soon after he died, a group of his friends in Dublin got together to create a permanent memorial to him. They paid £300, which is just over 26,000 euros in today's money, to get the Sam Maguire Cup made in Dublin. The GEA were proud to accept it as a recognition of his twin contributions to the War of Independence and his role as a Protestant player and captain of the GEA. These days, Sam Maguire's work with Michael Collins has been completely airbrushed out of history. But even though his achievements have been long forgotten, his name lives on, revered by everyone with even the slightest interest in Gaelic football.
Wow.
Just a wonderful story. It's you know, a super, super, super story.
Call it for us on the day, the 11th of September. Who do you think will win?
The head says Tyrone. The heart says Mayo. I really love to see Mayo doing it. I really would. Yeah, and I have some Mayo friends.
Did
as
you
well.
Know about the curse, the Mayo curse?
Yes, you'd probably be able to fill me in better on this. But
I only heard it last night. Apparently, the last time they won it was the 1951 or something. And there was great celebrations on the bus as they drove from Croke Park in Dublin with Sam Maguire in the bus. And as they drove through Foxford, there was a funeral happening and the celebrations continued on the bus. And the priest apparently at the time put a spell or put a curse on them and said that they would not, Mayo would not win another All-Ireland football final until every single member of that panel had died.
So they're out hunting them now.
And I don't know. I think in a conversation over dinner last night, it was thought that maybe one was still alive or had been up to recently. So I don't know what the actual status is, but we'll see. We'll know he's gone if they win.
Yeah, but you as a kind of a reinvented clairman would know that there's been an awful lot of those old stories have gone.
Do you remember, was it Biddy Early put the curse on the Clare Hurlers and said that there wouldn't be another win until every member of the panel was a single man? And that was the case in 1995. All of the players were single.
Yeah,
some of them were engaged.
And then Davey went off to Oxford.
He won't even go down that road now. Is that it, George? Is that all the news?
That's about it, Jerry. I think we've
all
done
right.
it.
We've done it we've perfectly. All right. Listen, thanks a million. Always good to hear from you. And hopefully we'll be doing this in a studio together one of these days, as the men says.
Eating chips.
And that'd be lovely. Right. So, George Lee, thank you very much indeed.
God bless, Jerry.